It's a blaster, isn't it?
Good. I'll start the engines and get you some power for the turret motors.
The wall bins for Grenz were empty, which was hardly surprising, but the control board in front of the driver's seat looked good, the indicators alive with electricity. There was lots of juice in the nuke batteries, hydraulics were normal, and almost a full tank of gas.
With this, Lord Cotter can grind Overton in the dirt.
Wyndham awkwardly climbed into the turret. The passage wasn't designed for a man with his wide shoulders.
Send the Outlander and his bastard blue shirt straight to hell.
That's the plan.
Christie dropped into the driver's seat and almost didn't hear the telltale tick-click of a trigger mechanism setting.
Let's move this can!
From the turret, only the sergeant's boots were visible.
Can't.
The redhead sat absolutely motionless, her temples pounding.
Is the engine broke?
Christie swallowed with difficulty.
No. I'm sitting on an armed booby trap.
Elsewhere in the fortress, armed Sekhmen strained to keep still and not rush outside as the sounds of warfare in the corridors and streets grew louder, then dimmed, returning once more to ebb and fade. The sounds were coming through the grilled ventilation slots high in the granite block walls. The formidable door to the armory was built of sturdy oak beams, not just flimsy planks, and held together with wide bands of wrought iron riveted firmly into place. Four large hinges supported the door, and at least two men were needed to push it aside, even when unlocked.
Sir, the villa's being attacked!
Let's grab some blasters and help defend our home! Folks are dying!
Rows of empty blaster racks lined the walls, and almost every box of cartridges was gone. Only a few of the older muzzle-loading long blasters and some rusty wheel guns waiting to be repaired were still on the shelves and work tables. The men guarding the armory were armed only with axes and crossbows. Nothing that might destroy the precious hoard of powder.
And what if it's a trick?
The captain was sitting on a small keg of black powder next to a full-size hogshead of more explosive gunpowder. Embedded in the top of the big wooden container was a wheel gun, the handle jutting out and the hammer cocked for instant use. One pull on that trigger and the huge barrel of explosives would detonate, spreading a fiery chain reaction to every other barrel, keg, drum, box, and crate in the armory building. An explosion that would level the fortress.
A trick?
The five others shared the man's confusion.
Overton wants to chill us and seize the armory. What better way than to stage a fake attack using his own men to pretend to be locals, and then wait for us to rally to their aid?
So what do we do? What can we do?
We sit tight.
The captain of the guards took a plug of tobacco from his pocket and bit off a chaw. Smoking and striking a flame in the armory was beyond forbidden. Even the light came from some pre-dark contraption called a safety lantern hanging from the rafters. Supposedly, the tiny flame inside the glowing mesh wick behind the glass flue wouldn't ignite gas fumes in the air and was allegedly safe to use near raw gunpowder. The Baron had paid a fortune to buy it from the widow of a coal miner killed in a brawl. The Sekhmen glanced nervously at the large hogshead barrel cushioned on a bed of dry straw to keep it away from the moisture on the floor.
We just wait.
The Sekhmen licked dry lips.
The way soldiers always have. We stand our post until Baron Cotter gives us the signal to join the attack.
In deliberate slowness, the officer placed an arm on top of the hogshead, his fingers only inches away from the primed pistol.
Or we send Overton straight to hell.
A steady rain of bullets chattered from the palisades of Front Royal, the tattered leaves falling from the trees as Ryan and the other men retreated deeper into the forest until reaching a woody glen.
We'll be safe for a few minutes.
Ryan dropped the stire and a canvas satchel. On the parapet, he had noticed spare clothes inside the bags and wanted to double-check that the items were dirty. He lifted a shirt to find it sweat-stained and horribly smelly, something worn by a man who had toiled in the hot sun all day. There was only one possible explanation for Nathan giving them dirty clothes to wear. The one-eyed man glanced toward Front Royal and almost smiled.
You crafty bastard. Triple clever, nephew. Well done.
J.B. retrieved his hat from inside his shirt. Slapping the fedora against his leg, he beat the water from the fabric.
Safe enough for what?
Until it's safe enough to return, and finally chill, Overton.
How are we getting back inside the vill?
Dean vigorously shook the water out of his blaster. The sealed brass cartridges wouldn't be damaged by the brief soaking in the moat, but any floating debris in the water could impair the ejector mechanism, causing it to jam while firing.
Drawbridge closed.
Jack laid the other satchel on the ground.
Gotta be.
Doc was shivering slightly.
Indeed. Unless the man is a complete fool, the vill is now sealed tighter than the proverbial drum.
Good. That'll work in our favor.
Yanking apart the drawstrings holding the canvas bags tightly closed, Ryan started to haul out the dirty clothes.
Strip and put these on.
He tossed the filthy garments to the others.
Socks, underwear, change everything.
Water pooled around Dean's boots. The shirt and pants were reeking, stiff with dried sweat, and even a few bloodstains.
Mine aren't that bad.
His father ripped off his own shirt.
Do it, Dean, and do it quickly.
Better than nothing, I suppose.
J.B. exchanged his soaking clothes for the relatively dry items from the satchel.
Would have been nice if Nathan had given us clean stuff to wear.
It's the only thing that might save our lives.
Ryan buckled an old worn belt. The pants were too big, the shirt too small, and his skin itched from the contact with somebody else's pungent laundry. Hopefully, it would be powerful enough. It was a dangerous plan, but a lot better than his idea of running on foot to the Oxbow stables and stealing horses to ride back to Front Royal.
Worried about pneumonia?
No.
After getting dressed, the companions moved into the cover of some bushes and used the ammo in the bags to quickly reload their blasters. There were plenty of rounds for everybody, including a small plastic jar of black powder and cotton wadding for Doc's huge Lama.
The copper nipples of the primers should be fine.
Doc was purging the compartments of his revolver and stuffing in fresh powder and shot. He gingerly added the clean wadding on top, then pressed each compartment in the cylinder down tight with the built-in arming lever. A touch of grease from his soaked ammo pouch sealed each hole, and the monster hand cannon was ready for use again.
Nathan thought of everything.
J.B. thumbed fresh rounds into a spare clip for the Uzi.
That he did.
Ryan worked the bolt on the stire to check the action. It was a little stiff, taking a fraction of a second off his firing time. Damn. Some of the lubricant had to have washed off in the moat. He would have to watch for that in the coming fight. Just then, a steady pounding sounded over the distant blaster fire from the fortress, and the ground began to vibrate as if an earthquake were coming.
Cavalry!
Jack drew a knife and his Colt Python.
Hide in trees.
Don't move.
Ryan slung the long blaster.
Lower your weapon. Make no threatening gestures. And don't talk.
Before the others could ask questions, a dozen horses thundered into view from the trees, the riders wearing blue shirts and bent low, urging the straining animals to gallop faster. Racing past the companions, the mounted Sekhmen rode across the glen at a full gallop. Seconds later, a pack of dogs appeared, sprinting low across the ground, chasing the terrified riders. Oddly, none of the hounds were barking.
Dark night. Nathan unleashed the bastard dogs!
Bred and crossbred for generations after Skydark, the dogs of Front Royal were its first line of defense against invaders. The huge bull mastiffs, their coats black as midnight, were heavily muscled, possessed oversized jaws, and never barked or growled to give away their presence. As quiet as death itself, the colossal hounds flashed toward their victims in unnerving silence. The riders were halfway across the glen when the dogs reached the horses, circling their prey to the front to stop their escape. A Sekhman fired his AK-47, the stuttering rounds churning the ground, but coming nowhere near the darting dogs. Then a large bitch bit the horse in the leg, and the animal reared in pain, dropping its rider. The Sekhman hit the ground, and another dog ripped out his throat, blood gushing into the air. The other Sekhman wildly sprayed the weapons everywhere, struggling to control their mounts. A dog charged and ducked, causing two horses to collide. Nearly losing his seat, one blue shirt accidentally shot another Sekhman and wounded a horse. The rider dropped away, and the bleeding horse bolted for the trees. Converging on the fallen man, the hounds savagely tore out gobbets of flesh, then broke apart, offering no mass target for the chattering blasters. Ryan knew this was Nathan's new training. The former Baron simply starved the beasts and let them eat the victims. but a full belly made the hound slow. Now the mastiffs removed a throat or opened a belly, then moved to kill again. The Sekhmen were cursing, firing their automatic weapons randomly, the bucking horses